This is Bob Proctor with message number 4 from the Lead the Field Seminar, Miracle of Your Mind. Earl Nightingale began by saying, "In this message, I want to tell you about a plan you can follow, which takes only a little time each day, 5 days a week, and which brings results out of all proportion to the time spent. No one ever made a purposeful accomplishment without a clear goal toward which to work. I hope you've established one. For a moment, consider the things your mind has brought you. Everything you have, your work, your relationship with your family and others, your philosophy of life, all come to you as a result of using your mind. Now, consider the estimate made by the experts. You have probably been operating on less than 10% of your mental capacity, much less. In a recent article for the Saturday Review, our old friend Herbert Otto, psychologist, educator, and chairman of the National Center for the Exploration of Human Potential, reminded us that many well-known scientists, such as the late Abraham Maslow, Margaret Mead, Gardner Murphy, O. Spurgeon English, and Carl Rogers, subscribe to the hypothesis that man is using a very small fraction of his capacities. Margaret Mead quotes a 6% figure. Herbert Otto writes, "My own estimate is 5% or less. Neurological research has shed new light on man's potential. Work at the UCLA Brain Research Institute points to enormous abilities latent in everyone by suggesting an incredible hypothesis. The ultimate creative capacity of the human brain may be, for all practical purposes, they point out, infinite. To use the computer analogy, man is a vast storehouse of data, but we have not learned how to program ourselves to utilize these data for problem-solving purposes." Much of the research that Earl Nightingale shares with us in this message has been updated, so some of the information has been changed. However, the overall concept is every bit as accurate as it was in the early 60s when he first prepared this material. One of the greatest resources available today is the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential, which was started by Glenn Doman. I would highly recommend that you contact them at 215-233-2050 and order the book, How to Multiply Your Baby's Intelligence. Believe me, this book is not just for new parents. It is, without question, one of the most interesting and informative books that I have in my library. It will help you understand why you are like you are, and better still, it will give you insight into what you are capable of becoming. One of the most beautiful truths that I have learned in my life is that mind is perfect. There can be no mind damage, only brain damage. And as Mr. Doman has demonstrated through his lifetime of research, we have an abundance of brain cells, and we can, apparently, educate brain cells that are no longer being utilized to do what the damaged brain cells are no longer able to do. Now let's return to Earl Nightingale. He said, "The following appeared in Soviet Life Today, a USSR English language magazine. I quote, "The latest findings in anthropology, psychology, logic, and physiology show that the potential of the human mind is very great indeed. As soon as modern science gave us some understanding of the structure and work of the human brain, we were struck with its enormous reserve capacity," writes Yevremov, eminent Soviet scholar and writer. He continued, "Man, under average conditions of work and life, uses only a small part of his thinking equipment. If we were able to force our brain to work at only half its capacity, we could, without any difficulty whatsoever, learn 40 languages, memorize the large Soviet encyclopedia from cover to cover, and complete the required courses of dozens of colleges." This statement is hardly an exaggeration. It is the generally accepted theoretical view of a person's mental potentialities. Now, how can we tap this gigantic potential? It is a big and very complex problem with many ramifications, but, as Herbert Otto points out, it is clear that persons who live close to their capacity, who continue to activate their potential, have a pronounced sense of well-being and considerable energy. They see themselves as leading purposeful and creative lives. The way most people use their mind can be compared to the time back in the early 19th century when just the eastern coast of the North American continent was settled. Just a strip along the coast. To the west stretched the raw, undeveloped great bulk of what was later to become the incredibly rich 90% of the economy, 90% of the natural resources, which resulted in the standard of living enjoyed here today by Americans. Great analogy. Paints a picture in our mind, doesn't it? If you're going to live close to your capacity, activate your potential, and enjoy the benefits that Herbert Otto referred to, I would suggest that you begin to focus on yourself, your true self. By now, you are well aware there is a whole lot more to you than the physical instrument that you refer to as your body. You are a spiritual being living in a physical body. And you have been gifted with intellectual factors that will enable you to do anything you can imagine. In your management guide, in the section Miracle of Your Mind, you will see a graphic illustration where there's a group of lines, if you can imagine it, like lines on a sheet of paper. And off to the right side, you're going from a higher to a lower potential. So if you could see this, at the top of a page to the right-hand side, we have the words spiritual. Halfway down the page, we have intellectual. And at the bottom of the page, we have physical. Now let the horizontal lines on the page represent levels of vibration. In truth, there are millions upon millions of levels of vibration. We frequently refer to these levels of vibration as frequencies. Clearly understand that each frequency is hooked up to the one above and the one below, as depicted in the graphic illustration. In other words, there's no line of demarcation where one frequency stops and another starts, or where one level of vibration stops and the other starts. And as you look at that graphic illustration and think about it, you're going to realize that the spiritual side of you is hooked up to the physical side. The intellectual side is hooked up to the spiritual side. In truth, it's all one, just different levels of the same thing. When we give this subject the thought it deserves, we will realize that although we never see it with the naked eye, we must understand that the non-physical or spiritual side of our personality and its polar opposite, the physical side, are in truth all hooked together. There is no line of demarcation where one part of the personality stops and the other starts. They are all hooked together like the colors of a rainbow. As we proceed with this lesson and begin to investigate the role that our intellectual factors play in our lives, you will see, through the proper use of your intellect, you have the ability to tap into the non-physical world of which you are a part and, by law, alter the physical world of which you are also a part. Now, to go back to Earl's words, he said, if everything you have is the result of using just 10% of your mind, consider for a moment what it will mean to you and your family if you can increase this percentage. This message will show you how to use infinitely more of your mental powers, how to develop some of that 90% virgin territory. None of us, as a rule, has the slightest notion of the real capabilities of his or her mind. But believe me, when I say that your mind can be compared to an undiscovered gold mine, and it makes no difference whether you're 17 or 70. Look at it this way. Your goal is in the future. Your problem is to bridge the gap which exists between where you are now and the goal you intend to reach. This is the problem to solve. Robert Seashore, when chairman of the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University, pointed out that successful people are not people without problems. They're simply people who have learned to solve their problems. You've got to admit, they're beautiful lines. I loved them when I first read them many years ago. I still do today. I was recently speaking at a conference, and Paul Hutsey, a good friend of mine for the past 30 years, was also speaking on the program. He did something that illustrated Robert Seashore's idea beautifully. He had small cards prepared about the size of a business card, just four words printed on them. On one side was printed, the situation. On the other side, the solution. Paul pointed out that winning was a matter of how you play your cards. At that point, he had these cards passed out to the audience. He said, since the conscious mind can only entertain one idea at a time, you will either focus on the situations or the solutions. His cards went over big with the audience. And as he was doing it, I thought to myself that Paul had built a very successful career as well as a happy family life by playing his cards right. He always had his focus on the winning side, the solutions. Now back to Earl. He said, and there you have it. Living successfully, getting the things we want from life, is a matter of solving the problems which stand between where we now are and the point we wish to reach. No one is without problems. They're a part of living. But let me show you how much time we waste in worrying about the wrong problems. Here's a reliable estimate of the things people worry about. Things that never happen, 40%. Things over and past that can't be changed by all the worry in the world, 30%. Needless worries about our health, 12%. Petty, miscellaneous worries, 10%. Real, legitimate worries, 8%. In short, 92% of the average person's worries take up valuable time, cause painful stress, even mental anguish, and are absolutely unnecessary. And of the real legitimate worries, there are two kinds. There are the problems we can solve, and there are the problems beyond our ability to personally solve. But most of our real problems usually fall into the first group, the ones we can solve, if we'll learn how. There must be millions of people today who feel they are being barred from the life they want because they look upon problems not as challenges to be met, but as wide chasms beyond their ability to bridge. A little research proves that successful people have the same kind of problems. One of the very real benefits of working with a psychologist or a psychiatrist comes from learning that there are hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of other people with problems identical to our own. So the whole thing boils down to a matter not of problems, which are common to us all, but to our ability to solve them. Now, I am going to assume you have decided upon a goal. Your problem is, how do I achieve it? Your goal may be a promotion, a greater income, a beautiful home. It makes little difference what your goal happens to be. For a young person, it could be better grades in school, a diploma or degree. But you have your goal, and you know you will become, and you will achieve what you think about. That is, if you stay with it, you will reach your goal. But how? Well, it's right here that your mind comes into play. What is your mind? No one knows for sure. Perhaps the best way to describe it is to quote Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Archibald MacLeish. In his play, The Secret of Freedom, a character says, "The only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else you can find in a pig or a horse." That's uncomfortably true. The human mind is one thing that separates us from the rest of the creatures on earth. Everything that means anything to us comes to us through our minds. Our love of families, our beliefs, all of our talents, knowledge, abilities, everything is reflected through our minds. Anything that comes to us in the future will almost certainly come to us as a result of the extent to which we use our mind. And yet, it is the last place on earth that the average person will turn for help. When I first heard the Lead the Field program, it was the part in the mind that really grabbed my attention. It's something I knew nothing about, but I had read where Earl said, "We don't know what it is." That made me feel good. I knew I was starting at the same point he was at. We have been taught to know the truth, and the truth would set us free. There is only one thing to be set free from, and that is ignorance. After seriously studying the mind, human potential, and the results that the vast majority of people get, I have arrived at the conclusion that the reason most people do not go to their mind for the help they need is they really don't understand how it functions. The marvelous mental tools that we've been gifted with at birth, for the most part, lie dormant throughout life, and as a result, there is very little life. mostly mere existence. Napoleon Hill said it best when he wrote that an educated person is not necessarily a person with an abundance of general or specialized knowledge. An educated person is one who has so developed the faculties of his mind that he can acquire anything he wants or its equivalent without violating the rights of others. Over the years, I have conducted seminars for tens of thousands of people in all parts of the world, and it is only on a rare occasion where you will find an individual who understands what the faculties of the mind are and how to develop them. Approximately 97% of our population are conditioned from birth to live through their senses. Earl Nightingale quoted Archibald MacLeish when he said, "The only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else you can find in a pig or a horse." Earl then commented, "That was uncomfortably true." He went on and said that the human mind is the only thing that separates us from the rest of the creatures on earth. In fact, it is the faculties of the mind that separate us. Animals operate by instinct, which is perfect. When you and I were created, instinct was removed, and our intellectual factors were put in their place. Unfortunately, we are not trained to use them, and living through our senses leaves us in much the same position as our pets, since they too can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. In the section of The Miracle of Your Mind, in your Lead the Field Seminar Management Guide, I have outlined the intellectual factors for you. You have reason. That gives you the ability to think. Memory. Memory is perfect. Your memory can be developed through association, ridiculous association. The Nightingale-Conant Corporation have some excellent programs on memory. I would suggest you order one today and begin developing your memory. It's a wonderful tool, and it just needs some exercise. Then you have intuition, your sixth sense. That's the part that translates vibrations for you. I could walk by a person on the street and give you a very good read on their personality. And you know something? When you develop your intuitive factor, you will be able to too. Your imagination, that's your ability to create and build pictures. The will is your ability to concentrate. Think about that. It's a wonderful tool, something most people are not very good at. Perception, that's your point of view. Do you know, your perception of life will change many times as you go through this program. Now, as we proceed through these various lessons, from time to time, I will refer to these intellectual factors, suggesting how you can strengthen them. If you would begin looking at them as mental muscles that can be strengthened through exercise, just as the various physical muscles in your body can, you are well aware that this is the age of the mind. And by developing your mental faculties, you'll be able to write your own ticket. Now let's go back and take a look at what Earl said on this. He said, "In order to reflect just a moment on the human mind, consider what it's accomplished. As you do, realize we are developing so rapidly that we've come further in the realm of progress in the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization." Well, as you read that and you hear that in this Lead the Field seminar, I think you know it's true. Keep this in mind. Earl Nightingale wrote this program in the early 60s. When he suggested you go back 50 years, he was taking you back to approximately 1910. Today, long-range planning is done in months. More changes have taken place in the last year than took place in the 50 years Earl was referring to, or the 10,000 years prior to that. This would probably be an appropriate place to start talking about one of your intellectual factors, reason. It's your reasoning factor that you think with. If you wanted to get technical about it, you think with your inductive reasoning factor. I remember when I was working with Earl Nightingale, I was at a speaking engagement with him, and he said, if the average person said what they were thinking, they would be speechless. I remember having a difficult time to stop laughing. However, when I did and realized what he had said, I became aware of how accurate he really was. We must never mistake mental activity for thinking. Most people are going to old movies. Stand back objectively and watch what most people are doing, or listen to what they're saying. It will be very obvious they're not thinking. Otherwise, they would never say what they're saying or do what they're doing. On numerous occasions, I have quoted the late Dr. Kenneth McFarland as saying that 2% of the people think, 3% think they think, and 95% of the population would rather die than think. I'm inclined to agree with him. Thinking is hard work. That's why Henry Ford said so few people engage in it. There is, however, tremendous compensation for the person who will train themselves to think constructively. And that's what this Lead the Field seminar is helping you do. Now back to Earl Nightingale. He said, "Of all the scientists who had ever lived, it is estimated that 90% of them are alive today. We've reached, in the area of ideas and human advancement, a plateau so high it was undreamed of by even the most optimistic forecasters as recently as 10 years ago. But every new idea triggers additional ideas, so that now we're in an area of compounding advancement on every front and in every area. That staggers the imagination, from landing on the moon to the great bridges which span our bays and rivers, the harnessing power of the sun in our atomic plants and ships. Every man-made thing you see and touch spawned from the most powerful agency in the world, the human mind. Dr. Harlow Shipley of Harvard has said that we are entering an entirely new age of man. He calls it the psychosic age, the age of the mind. And you own one, free and clear. Now, let's look at a few facts. The 40-hour week-long standard is in imminent likelihood of being even further shortened. This means that the average working person has, at their disposal, an enormous amount of free time. In fact, if you will total the hours in a year and subtract the sleeping hours, if a person sleeps 8 hours every night, you'll find that she or he has almost 6,000 waking hours, of which he or she spends less than 2,000 on the job. Now, this leaves the person 4,000 hours a year, which he is neither working nor sleeping. These can be called discretionary hours, with which he can do pretty much as he pleases. At least, his mind is free. Now, so you can see the amazing results in your life, I want to recommend that you take just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and devote this hour to exercising your mind. Pick 1 hour a day on which you can fairly regularly count. The best time for me is an hour before the others are up in the morning. The mind is clear, the house is quiet, and, if you like, with a fresh cup of coffee, this is the time to start the mind going. And here's one good way to do it. Now, before we get into Earl's suggestion on how to do it, let me tell you what I did after studying this for some time. This particular suggestion has earned me a small fortune. Keep in mind, I've been listening to this for a long time, so I am well aware of the value of this idea, and I've used it for many different projects. When I decided to write the book, You Are Born Rich, this is how the book was written. I joined the 6 o'clock club. I was up, showered, dressed with a fresh cup of coffee, ready to rock and roll by 6 a.m. You Were Born Rich has qualified as a best-selling book every year for many years. It has been translated into other languages, was turned into a seminar, and used as a training program in various parts of the world. I think you will agree that the early hours I invested in writing that book were certainly worthwhile. Now let's get back to Earl and the idea. He said, "During this hour every day, take a completely blank sheet of paper. At the top of the page, write your present primary goal, clearly, simply. Then, since our future depends upon the way in which we handle our work, write down as many ideas as you can for improving that which you now do. Try to think of 20 possible ways in which the activity that fills your day can be improved. You won't always get 20, but even one idea is good. Now remember two important points with regard to this. One, this is not particularly easy. And two, most of your ideas will not be any good. When I say it's not easy, I mean it is like starting any new habit. At first, you'll find your mind a little reluctant to be hauled up and out of an old familiar rut. But as you think about your work and ways in which it might be improved, write down every idea that pops into your head, no matter how absurd it might seem. Let me tell you what will happen. Some of your ideas will be good and worth testing. The most important thing this extra hour accomplishes, however, is that it deeply embeds your goal into your subconscious mind, starts the whole vital machinery working the first thing every morning, and 20 ideas a day, if you can come up with that many, total 100 a week, even if you don't think on weekends. An hour a day, 5 days a week, totals 260 hours a year, and still leaves you 3,740 hours of free leisure time. Now, this means you'll be thinking about your goal and ways of improving your performance, increasing your service 6.5 full extra working weeks a year. 6.5 40-hour weeks devoted to thinking and planning. Can you see how easy it is to rise above the so-called competition? And it will still leave you with 15 hours a day to spend as you please. Start each day thinking. You'll find that your mind will continue to work all day long. You'll find that at odd moments, when you least expect it, really great ideas will begin to pop into your mind. When they do, write them down as soon as you can. Just one great idea can completely revolutionize your work, and as a result, your life. Well, I know that Earl's suggestion in that case certainly helped me. It's altered my life like night and day. And I think this is an appropriate point for you to move into action. What would you do with that extra hour in the morning? I mentioned I used it at one point to write a book. Take the time to make a written commitment that you will begin immediately to be a member in good standing of the 6 a.m. Club. And state in writing the project you'll begin and complete with this extra hour. So take the time to fill out your commitment in the management guide. Now let's go back to Earl Nightingale. He said, "If you want to develop the muscles of your body, you take daily exercise of some sort. The mind is developed the same way, except that the returns are out of all conceivable proportion to the time and energy spent. The mind of man can lift anything. His muscles, even the best developed, are puny alongside those of some of the dumbest animals on earth. If man had depended on his muscles for survival, he probably would have disappeared as did the dinosaur, which were, incidentally, the most physically powerful creatures that ever lived. Let me give you just some of the results people have reported to me as a consequence of following this one-hour-a-day routine. An office equipment salesman sold more of his company's products in 1 month than he had formerly sold in an entire year during the 4 years he had been with the company. A Sunday school teacher with 5 pupils set a goal of 30 pupils. Her last letter told us she now has a class of 25 and she's almost reached her goal. I've used this system for years, and it has given me some of the most gratifying and rewarding experiences of my life. And it costs only 5 hours a week. 5 hours out of 168. Is it worth it? It's like spending 5 hours a week digging in a solid vein of pure gold, because your mind is all of that, and much more. Each time you write your goal at the top of a sheet of paper, don't worry or become concerned about it. Think of it as only waiting to be reached, a problem only waiting to be solved. Face it with faith, and bend all of the great powers of your mind towards solving it. And believe me, solve it you will. Well, you've got to admit, that's probably one of the best suggestions you're going to get from anyone that Earl has just shared with us. In your management guide, you're going to find space for you to write your goal, and there's also a space to jot down the 6 ideas. You might want to use that space in the management guide tomorrow morning when you get up and join the 6 o'clock club. Now come back to Earl Nightingale. He said, "You know, this puts each of us in the driver's seat. Now let's briefly recap. Number 1, this week start spending 1 hour each day getting as many ideas as you can. Try for 20 a day on ways to improve what you're now doing. Remember, the achievement of your goal very likely depends upon it, as does your whole future. Once you start exercising your mind in this way, I know you'll want to continue the practice. Number 2, if everything you now have is the result of using, say, 5 or 10% of your mental ability, You can imagine what life would be like if you can increase this figure by 20% or more. Number three, successful people are not people without problems. They are simply people who have learned to solve their problems. Number four, don't waste time and energy worrying about needless things. 40% of them will never happen. 30% have already happened and can't be changed. 12% are needless worries about your health. 10% are petty miscellaneous worries. And only 8% are real. Try to separate the real from the unnecessary and solve those which are within your ability to solve. Number five, the human race has advanced further during the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization. We are now living right in the middle of the golden age that we have been dreaming of and praying for centuries. And it's going to get better. Last of all, the only thing in the world that can take you to your goals in life is your mind, its effective use, and following through on the good ideas it supplies you. Each of us has a tendency to underestimate his or her own abilities. We should realize that we have deep within ourselves a reservoir of great ability, even genius, that can be tapped if we'll just dig deep enough. It's the miracle of your mind.